Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode of How to Be Sound is sponsored by the Huawei P20 Pro, the new smartphone taking the tech world by storm. It has the highest resolution selfie camera on any smartphone, and the P20 Pro was recently awarded a score of 109 by DxO Mark, the highest score ever given to a smartphone, officially making it the best smartphone camera on the market. The Irish Independent said it produces photos you'd barely believe weren't from a bigger camera, and Forbes talked about its incredible resolution and zoom capabilities. But look, we all know I'm here for the selfie camera. The Huawei P20 Pro launches tomorrow. Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Be Sound, the podcast where I talk to interesting people who tell me how to be interesting and sound too. That's basically the tagline that I'm looking for. I am joined today by Declan Levy, Are you ever a former journalist, do you think? I was going to say former journalist.
Well, because I only did like journalism, actual journalism in the Daily Mail, for about 6 months because it paid well. But then I was a magazine editor and then I became an online publisher because I wasn't ever really a blogger. I like to think of my online as an online magazine. It was not a blog. So I don't know, former journo.
former slashy current. And what's your current job title?
I'm a social media manager.
Okay, for a charity.
For a charity in London, yeah.
Yeah.
In the UK.
And so what do you remember? I mean, to set the scene, what do you remember about? Do you remember the first time we met?
It must have been at an event. No, it wouldn't have been. It would have been like a breakfast or something that lended itself to us talking and me thinking, oh, I like her because she's kind of
cute.
No, but I remember thinking, because by the time I met you, I'd been doing it. I got into it in 2005, into the magazine world. So by that stage, I was sort of meeting a lot of, you know, the same people, dying to be famous, dying to be successful.
And having the same chats.
And having the same chats about how wonderful their life is, how busy they are.
Yeah.
I always hated that bullshit. I mean, I probably wasn't really cut out for that side of things. I just liked writing. I was good at it. I liked editing magazines. That was sort of my thing. I guess the social stuff came as a side. But yeah, I remember when I met you, I was like, oh, I like this girl because she kind of says it like it is.
I think like my first recollection of us actually kind of talking, I think, was at the Victoria Beckham. There was an event in Brown Thomas where Victoria Beckham was brought in to talk about her fashion collection.
Yeah.
And there was a handful of press and what they would probably call nowadays influencers, but press and bloggers were invited.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went along and sat had a rapt audience with Victoria Beckham.
And I remember Harper came in.
Yeah.
And just completely, because we'd been given, I remember I'd been in America for 3 weeks. I flew in, literally flew from Chicago and came straight to Brown Thomas. And
we were all so thirsty for Victoria Beckham, weren't we?
And we were, don't do this. And Claire, was it Claire? Somebody interviewed her with our questions that we had.
I think it was Claire Byrne. We were told not to take any photographs. So obviously we all spent the whole time trying to look like we were typing into our phones and taking photos of her.
Yeah. I remember Harper came in and just broke the atmosphere and we all laughed and Victoria softened and then we got pictures. Remember I had to crop people out so it looked like it was just myself and Victoria in the picture. And I still dine out on that. Every so often I go, did I tell you about the time I met Victoria Beckham?
Yeah, every now and then I'll make it my Facebook profile picture if I feel like I'm not getting enough attention. But that Harper Beckham thing was like a bit of a scandal because, not that like Harper didn't do anything scandalous, she was two.
Yeah.
But she came in and she was walking.
Yeah.
And one of the women there took a really quick picture of her and tweeted it. And the next thing you know, it was everywhere. It was in the Daily Mail. It was on Extra. It was like Harper takes her first step.
Yes, I remember.
And it was everywhere. And there was a bit of a furore because we hadn't been meant to take any photos. We definitely hadn't been meant to be publishing. We hadn't, like, definitely weren't meant to be taking any photos of the child.
Of the child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was outrageous.
We won't say who that was, but I'll ask you later.
I'd say Harper is now looking back going, great, that was my first moment of fame.
My first moment of fame. Yeah. Do you follow her on Instagram?
Harper?
No, Victoria.
I was like, is Harper 16 now? What? I used to follow Victoria. You know what? I recently, probably about 6 months ago, I unfollowed every single account that made me think anything negative about myself or my life or what I was doing, including like a lot of Irish influencers and bloggers who I know and like. And I went, you know what? Because I was just in kind of a bad place. Yeah. Like I was feeling very low and I didn't need to see people who were getting invited to things I wasn't being invited to, people who were getting sent things I wasn't being sent, people who were having much better lives than me.
Yeah.
So Victoria Beckham fell into that category.
Okay.
And so did like a lot of other people who would love to be in the same category as Victoria Beckham. Yeah.
Like I totally get that. I mean, at my lowest before I moved to London, I unfollowed loads of people because I was just that frustration of, God, why wasn't I invited to that? Why didn't I get that partnership? Why don't, you know, so, but I've recently started following Victoria Beckham just because she did that stuff for Sport Relief.
Oh yeah, and she is funny, isn't she? Like she's quite funny online.
My big problem with it is she did some great shots. She posted some great shots with her in, I don't know where she was exactly, but it was somewhere in Africa where she was with these kids.
Oh yes.
And it was a really gorgeous shot. But then the next pic was her like straddling sort of two pieces of wood or something with these huts either side of her in her crisp white t-shirt and gorgeous jeans. And it was almost like, here I am. It's that whole white saviour thing. But here I am, the rich white lady, come to save all the poor kids. But while I'm here, I'm going to, you know, this is a great opportunity for a photo. So I thought it was a shame. I thought she let herself down with that. Because some of her Instagram stories that over that time, over her visit, were really funny.
But
and she
also
helped raise millions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I think it is very difficult to ride that line between being kind of right on and then being, because Victoria Beckham, like from what I've seen of her Instagram, she puts up kind of gas shots of her practically doing the splits, like sitting on a chaise longue with one leg in the air. And so that's the kind of thing that she does. So if she goes to Zimbabwe or wherever she is and she's doing this thing for Sport Relief, is she supposed to kind of put mud on her face and, you know, take photos where she looks like haggard, like Princess Diana walking through the minefield? Do you know what I mean? So obviously she's kind of going, well, how do I do it where I'm being, you know,
myself,
still being authentic. But that old white savior thing, I mean, didn't was it Comic Relief recently said that they weren't going to use the celebrities in the same way because of the uproar after, I think it was Ed Sheeran, wasn't it, last year?
There
was a whole series of photographs.
Yeah, I think he was kind of the scapegoat for that whole white savior thing.
I mean, I wonder if it's because he's so white. You know, like it really brought it into stark contrast.
But they have, and they raised less money was raised this year as well, quite a significant amount into the millions.
And that's pretty tragic.
Whether it's a knock on from the Oxfam thing.
Yeah, but we're also picking up economically, which I mean, there's a lot to be talked about, I guess. You know, in terms of like rich people get richer because they keep their money.
Yeah.
So like, as we're all getting better off, are we actually less likely To donate.
Maybe it is.
Because when you have 10 euro, like you're like, oh, sure, I can give 2 euro. When you have 100, you're like, I want to keep that 100.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway. But you mentioned there moving to London.
Yes.
Which I kind of wanted to talk about, I guess, from the point of view of, I think, from an Irish perspective, we often romanticise moving abroad. And we say things like, Irish people are so begrudging and they're so insular and everybody knows everybody. It'd be so nice to go somewhere else where people are more open-minded.
Yeah.
So scientific study now, is that true?
I mean, I think that the Irish in London, certainly that they're the ones I would know of, they gravitate towards each other, absolutely. So you've got these pockets of, even on the gay scene, there's these pockets of, you know, the Irish gays who all hang out together. They all live in Clapham. They all go to the Two Brewers on a Friday night. And which is really nice, because I think I've found recently I've been, you know, become a bit more social. My long-term relationship ended. So I've probably become a bit more social, probably been forced to become more social. And actually what I've noticed is we're just good crack. Like the Irish are, we are great fun. You know, I was talking to you earlier about how I up the Irish. I mean, you do have the Irish in London who
do you, do the like Irish panto?
How
are you?
I mean, I definitely don't do. I sometimes do. I mean, I have a habit of just doing the Dublin accent with certain words. I think, you know, and just kind of for comedy value, but they don't get that because they just think an Irish accent is an Irish accent most of them.
Yeah.
But I was going out with an English guy for a little while and I was loving the whole, like, teaching him that you're one, you're man, grand.
That's
actually
so funny because you forget about your one and your man.
Oh,
like,
my God, yes.
There's a woman I know, Nadine, I think it was Nadine I was having the conversation with. She works as a makeup artist in Preen. I actually keep meaning to have her on the podcast because she's really interesting and she's like kind of a body positive activist by accident, just by virtue of being very body positive and fabulous herself.
Yeah.
But I remember when she first moved here, we were talking about your man, and she was like, I just didn't, like, whose man? My man? Your man? His man? What?
Yeah.
Like,
so, yeah, so my boyfriend at the time was like, he would say the same. What? What's your man? He's not my man. He's not, who? What's your one? But myself and Anna, my flatmate, were watching TV one night, and he was also watching TV with us, and somebody came up, an actress came up on the screen, and I said, oh my God, Anna, it's your one. And she was like, oh my God, you're one from Broadchurch. I was like, yes. And he said, you haven't said anything. You haven't said that person's name. How do you know? And I was like, you just know. Because it's when we can't think of someone's name. So we say your man or your one.
Yeah.
But we do always tend to know exactly who we're talking about. But another one I say, grand. Grand, everything's grand. Grand.
Yeah.
And it's only recently I've realised grand means, I mean, your arm could be hanging off. And, you know, you just got hit by a bus. Oh, how are you feeling? I'm grand. It does always mean okay. So how's that? Oh, yeah, it's grand. Or, oh, are you okay? Yeah, grand. So
but
I think it definitely
means
always,
can also mean good, can't it? Because, you know, if somebody says to you, oh, like, how are you getting on with the something difficult? And you go, you know what, it's actually grand.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're like, it's actually okay.
It's actually grand.
Like, it's good. Yeah. You know, it's better than I thought it was going to be, kind of thing.
I remember years ago, because I grew up in London. So when I was 7, my family moved from Ireland to London. And I lived there till I was 19. And then I moved to Dublin. But I remember watching Terry Wogan, who I loved. But I always thought he was a little bit, he always would take the piss out of the Irish a bit, I felt. You know, I remember watching his...
We're very sensitive to that, especially if you're in England, taking the piss out of Irish.
Because Graham Norton can be a bit like that too. But I remember watching his show, whatever show he was doing at the time, and he was talking about Aer Lingus air hostesses, and I remember him saying, you know, they come over and they say, no. And I remember thinking, that's ridiculous. No one says no. I say no all the time now. So it's like, so I hand someone their dinner. They go, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, definitely an element of upping it when I'm away. But there's a lot of... You know, I meet a lot of Irish who, the first thing you ask each other, no one else, no other country in the world seems to be as obsessed with where you're from as we are. I mean, the first thing, where you're from? Oh, I live in London. And then we go, no, but where are you actually from? We have this thing where I think it's because we want to make a connection, maybe. And I meet Dublin people as well, Dublin people especially, and they will not say, I remember talking to someone recently, and they're from, let's just say a part of Dublin that has a reputation for being rough. I'm not going to name it. And he just would not say where he was from. And I said, but where? Oh, in Dublin. But I moved 4 years ago. I'm like, it's okay. And then he said the place. I was like, oh, cool, yeah. My baba used to live near there. I remember when I first moved to Dublin, I rented a house nearby, blah, blah. You know, it's that kind of making that connection almost.
Yeah.
But, and then there's the accents. Because the first thing to go is the T's, dropping the T's. And most of the Irish people I know that are living there have done that. So it's like, I'll give an example.
Oh,
not like
so,
sitting, because that'd be too
no,
much.
No, but they've done that.
Yeah, that's it. Done that. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Done that. And what else? And then I mean,
why are we so, because, so I was speaking to an American girl recently who's studying in the University of Limerick, and she had a pure Limerick accent now, like 100%. And I went, oh God, like, and are you from here originally? And she was like, no. And she said she'd only been here for 6 months or something. And I went, oh my God. And she went, yeah, I lived in Scotland before this. And I apparently sounded completely Scottish then too.
Oh God.
But it was funny that she wasn't embarrassed about it. Whereas I feel like Irish people,
well,
there's a real, but that's it. Like, we have a real judgment if an Irish person loses their accent.
Oh, we do.
Because it's really like they're trying to be something they're not.
So
like,
that's
notions.
It too. Absolute notions. Oh, that's another thing I've taught everyone in work.
And notions.
They love it now. If they do something, they'll go, deck, notions, yeah? Like, as if to say. And I'll say, yes, well done. That was the proper use of notions. They love it, which is brilliant. Like, I've, you know, my boss is Italian, and then most of the other girls on the team are English. But yeah, they love a bit of notions. When I meet Irish people, I feel the need to give them my story, because I know they'll hear with me, they'll go, oh, he's... What's that accent? You know, because they want to pin it straight away.
And you don't want them to think that you've
lived
come to London
for,
and
lived there for 4 years.
Put on
and
a London
this
accent. Okay,
But actually, most people that meet me say, "How do you have an Irish accent? If you were 7 when you moved to London and lived there till you were 19?" But I think I grew up in a very, very Irish, Irish area, as in everybody had English accents. But it was that thing of I hung on to it because I knew how unique it was to have an Irish accent.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time with my family. We all kept our Irish accents. But now I feel the need to, when I meet someone, say, well, you know, I've lived here 4 years this time, but, you know, the last time I lived here, I lived here for like 13 years before. So actually I've spent half my life, you know.
Sometimes people go, right, mate.
But actually that something just came to me there. And talking about being sound, Irish people are really sound. And I think when you meet people out at parties and you're having a good laugh, I'll always end up talking to the Irish people because you just, it's that banter.
Yeah.
And people feed on it too. People do, you know, I find the English tend to really like the Irish, you know, that we get on very well with them. They enjoy the humour. But yeah, we're kind of just generally, I think Irish people are just really sound. I've always said it. And it's maybe because we don't take ourselves too seriously. I mean, we do and we don't, like most people. We're friendly. You know, chances are, you know, any Irish person I know, just very mannerly, very friendly, very funny, very personable. So, yeah. I think
we try.
As a generalisation.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I think we try very hard.
Yeah.
We're very polite in a way that I think English people think they're polite, but aren't a lot of the time. That, like, we're very polite in that we want everyone to have a good time and to feel, you know, we don't want anyone to feel awkward. Whereas I think sometimes with English people, if somebody feels awkward, they're kind of like, well, they feel awkward because they did something rude. Whereas we're like, oh, no. You don't want to make them feel awkward.
Yes.
Even if somebody's used their, you know, like stuff like table manners or something. Like you would never point that out. No. Whereas I feel like English people might slightly point it out and not really mind if somebody feels awkward. Whereas to us, that's the height of bad manners, is to make manners. Somebody feel bad in your own home.
I think we're polite in a very warm, we're polite and warm.
Yeah.
I think the Irish are very, again, it's a generalisation, but we're very, very, very warm.
But we're kind of obsessed with being nice to the point that, like, we won't complain in restaurants.
Oh, no, I mean, I do.
Well, like, so do I, because I'm not obsessed with being nice, but I think as a culture, we're very bad at
that. Oh, I will complain now, and I know I mortify people. I remember my ex of many years, I'd embarrass him. I remember at my parents' 25th wedding anniversary, 20 years ago, maybe.
What did you do?
No, I didn't do anything, but I remember we were in this restaurant in London, and the food was awful. It took ages. The food came out cold. It was just, my mum complained and complained and complained. And when the waiter came over, he said, how's everything? She said, grand, lovely, thank you. And I remember raging. I was very young. I mean, I could have only been like, 14, whatever. I don't know, I'm probably aging myself.
You're like, mum's lying to the waiter.
But I remember thinking, what? We all just looked at her and went, what? And I think that was like, I've never forgotten that time.
Yeah.
So if something annoys me, likewise, if I'm happy with something, I mean, I was at the doctor, you know, at the hospital a few weeks back, and she was so lovely. And I went and found the nurse. I said, thank you for being so lovely and making me feel really, 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 really comfortable. And she was so taken aback. Because whilst I will complain about stuff, I will. I mean, if someone isn't friendly with me in a supermarket, I'll be like raging.
Mm. That is true, though, that I think humans in general, we're more likely to complain.
Yeah,
than,
we are.
You know, like, you know, sometimes I'll find that, you know, if I'm talking about a partner or someone I'm dating, that I'll end up just telling my friend all the bad things about them. And then you suddenly realise your friend hates them because you've just been giving out about all the things that are driving you mad, because you don't bother going, oh my God, and then we had this lovely time and we did this and it was great.
Yeah.
You just go, you know what he did today?
Yeah, because that's normally the time you want the advice and
you want
support.
The support. Yeah.
I'm definitely guilty of that, unfortunately.
So, like, Irish people are super sound.
Yeah.
They're really kind. They're really warm. Are you going to move home?
No. No. I mean, look, never say never. My long-term relationship ended last year, and I think the end goal was always to, you know, move back. But having been here ran my business for 3 years, effectively. I had two really good years where I got lots of work and lots of, you know, sponsorship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a year which was awful. I mean, I was working in a shop practically half the time to pay the bills. And it's that security of being in London. Just sort of feeling quite secure that if you've lost your job tomorrow, there's other things you can do. That's not to say that wouldn't be the same in Ireland. I just think it left quite the mark on me when I was here, trying to, you know, I applied for a couple of things, didn't get them. And plus I love where I work. I love where I live. I see it as, I mean, I don't, God, I'd be living in a shed if I bought anything, but, you know, I live quite centrally at the moment in London, so I'll have to move quite far out if I'm to buy.
Yeah.
But I definitely see that as my, I love coming home. I love Dublin. I absolutely love Dublin. I was just talking to you earlier, when I moved back here when I was 19, so I moved back in 2000, and I moved back here to be openly gay, and people find that bizarre because I lived in London, but I lived in the suburbs in a very, very, how would you describe it? Just a very, maybe old-fashioned. You know, we didn't
kind
know.
Parochial,
but,
maybe?
Yeah, parochial it was, because we drank in all the Irish bars and all the Irish clubs.
Okay,
and, you know, I worked in an Irish bar and, you know, that kind of, it was just very, very, like you said, parochial. But I moved, you know, and I kind of moved here to be myself. And So that's why I love Dublin so much, because it did allow me to be myself. I mean, from the day I came out, I never had a problem with any of that. So it always was very easy for me. So I think that's why I have a very romanticised view of Dublin. So it took me so long. I mean, I'd come home and be so sad leaving. But now, in the last few months, as I'm coming home, I'm realising, yeah, I still love Dublin, but I don't want to live here.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'll never knock it, because I hate meeting Irish people in London or anywhere else who just knock it. Oh, it's tiny, it's this, that and the other. And I often say, have you been in Dublin recently? Have you seen the amount of restaurants and really great, and the kind of the bustling nightlife and the bars, and everyone's doing really well again.
You know what is so fun though? If somebody knocks Dublin, you know they haven't been there for ages. Yes. I love being really snobby about it and being like, oh my God, but have you seen the latest exhibition at IMMA, which I haven't seen? You know, to be like, and oh my God, have you seen the new wing in the National Gallery? It's actually amazing. Like, I haven't been to see it yet, but I love that kind of thing. And then people will be like, oh no, I haven't. And then you're like, you make them feel crap.
Yeah, I get super defensive. I own Dublin. You know, I'm like the London spokesperson for Dublin, because I just hate that, like knocking where you're from. Or I used to remember you'd meet people in Dublin who weren't from Dublin. Oh God, I hate that place. You know, they'd be from wherever around the country and they just immediately knock where they were from.
Yeah.
You know, and I always just have a thing. We fine. If you haven't had an awful experience where you're from and you hate it genuinely, that's fine. You're allowed to. But actually, is it just because it doesn't have as many bars and a great nightlife like Dublin does?
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah. And like, funnily, I think it's kind of grand to knock Dublin if you live there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That like when I'm going, oh, like I'm really sick of XYZ. But I went out with a guy for a while who was from South Africa. And he used to spend the whole time going, oh my God, it is so cold. It never stops raining in South Africa. We'd be doing this. And you'd just be like, shut up. Go back to South Africa. He was really handsome. So I was like, don't go back quite yet.
Don't go yet.
Eventually.
Let me have fun first.
Yeah, you're such a moaner.
So never say never. I love being near my nieces and nephews. I'm obsessed with them. So I guess every time I leave them, it's sad. But likewise, I'd never move home for the wrong reasons. So, yeah, never say never.
Well, I suppose you never know what the right reasons are until you suddenly have a compelling reason to move home.
Yeah,
My sister lives in the States now, and she's lived kind of in Europe and then in New York and then in Texas, and now she's in Indiana. So she's kind of, each step has taken her further away. It's taken her like a longer plane ride or two plane rides away. And she always, basically when she comes home, she gets to about day 3 or 4 and is like, oh my God, I want to move home. Yeah. Like, I love being home. I love being with mom and dad. I love Irish people. And I think as well, living in the States, you do really miss that Irish humor.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have a big, you know, I don't think she knows any other Irish people in Indiana anyway.
Right.
And, you know, there's not a big Irish community. And I think she really misses the explaining your man, or being able to say your man to someone who would understand. Whereas she's just become very American, and like not very American. She doesn't have an accent, but she'll, you know, in conversation she'll say part or she'll say sidewalk sometimes because if she says path, people don't understand her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think then when she goes back to the States, when she's there about 3 or 4 days, she kind of suddenly goes, oh, this is actually okay.
Yes.
Because I've like been able to get my groceries delivered in an hour and a half, and I've just ordered some stuff on Amazon Prime, and, you know, I've got a beautiful house with a pool and the weather's really nice.
See? Yeah,
exactly. And these kind of things.
I definitely feel the same. Like, I've been here now for about 5 days and it's really lovely. I was down in Rosslare and I didn't want to leave, and now I'm up here. But actually, I don't mind going home tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it is, for me, it is going home. You know, I still
That's
say...
That's actually what I was going to say, because you were saying home is Dublin, but then you've said home is London as well. So which feels like home?
I say both. So anyone in work will go, oh, have a great time at home, because that's how I say it. I'll go, oh, I'm flying home this weekend, but home is London. Home is where I've set up home, you know, where all my stuff is, where, you know, so where...
that's like the new proverb for the capitalist times of the 21st century. Home is where my stuff is.
Home is where my stuff is, yeah. I think that, but it is. It's home for now, you know. I suppose my heart will always be in Dublin.
So. Oh, my heart will be in Ireland.
I'm going to start singing in a second.
And will you fly home for the referendum?
Yeah, I do you know what? I am very ashamed to say I didn't vote in the marriage equality because I was in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
And I was disgusted that I couldn't.
I thought you were going to say, like, because I was in London, I had a big weekend planned.
No,
or something.
I was in Abu Dhabi, and the flight had cost a lot of money, and I couldn't change it. And so, do you know what? It's a lame excuse. It is a lame excuse because I expected people to vote yes so that I could get married.
Well, I mean, I don't think these things are excuses. That sounds less like an excuse to me and more like a reason.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it was definitely a reason.
You're in Abu Dhabi and you don't have 800 euro to spend on an extra flight coming home to vote and then going back to London.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a massive expense for you.
Yeah, and to be fair, at the time, that I remember 2 days before it, because I'd been in Abu Dhabi for a few days at that stage, and we were sitting on a beach. And we contemplated paying. We found flights for 750 quid each, and we were, will we do it? Will we do it? And everybody, all of our friends, said you'd be absolutely crazy.
You would be mad
because that's
yeah.
you can't afford that sort of money to come home.
Yeah.
So going back to your question, I am going to because I got the date's 25th.
The 25th of May. Yeah.
It's something I feel extremely strong about, and without a friend of mine had to carry so she was told she was pregnant, and at about 16 weeks. No, less than that. No, it's less than that, about 11 weeks. She was told that her baby would not survive outside the womb. And they tried various things and they didn't work. She was then told you...
They tried various things.
Various things internally that might fix it. His organs weren't developing properly.
Okay,
they tried
okay.
a couple of things and it didn't work. So she was told at the time, you will have to carry the baby full term. However, we have contacts in the UK. So that's what she was.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I was told, and I just remember thinking, that is disgusting. Mm. Even now, I get annoyed about it and quite emotional about it because it's just, she was told, your baby will not survive. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But because of the ridiculous laws in this country, you're going to have to either carry a full term or get, you know, as I say, get on a flight, go, you know, take the boat to another country, and she opted not to take that option, not to have an abortion, and that's absolutely because look, when you're in that situation, perhaps you are hoping for a miracle, but what it always comes back to for me is she should have had the choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
She should have had that choice. And what I get so angry about is these people with their views and their opinions, just like they were with the marriage equality, with the referendum then. These people who, you know, Mary, who lives at number 10, who gets to decide that every woman in this country should have a choice and should have a choice with what they do with their body. I'm not saying that I champion abortions. Because I don't have a really strong opinion on it. I think you should have that option. I think if you get yourself into a situation where you've an unwanted pregnancy or the pregnancy, it's not just if a pregnancy will affect your health or affect your life. It's also that you get yourself into a situation,
You find yourself
in a situation where you have an unwanted pregnancy. For me, you should have the choice not to go ahead with it.
Yeah.
Just like they do in the UK and other countries around the world.
Yeah.
I also feel, and I know people aren't going to agree with me on this because, you know, we live in a democracy. We live in a democracy, is that the right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, allegedly.
We allegedly do. I don't feel I should have a vote. I don't feel I should have a right to decide whether Mary at number 10
Is that because you're a man or... Do you mean anybody?
Anybody.
Okay, okay.
I don't really think it's because I'm a man and I shouldn't have, because I feel so strongly about it. Because it needs this is going to need men like me.
Yeah, and I mean,
who feel so strongly about it.
Yeah, I do think that's often a very harmful argument.
Yeah.
That on the one hand, we want everybody to get out and vote, but then on the other hand, when men stand up and say, no, I don't think women should be allowed, we go like, what?
What do you know?
It's none of your business.
Yeah, it's none of your business.
You know
what I mean? Should you have? No, I genuinely feel, and I don't know, in a very simplistic way, and it's probably a very, I just feel there should be a group of who represent a cross section of society, who are very well informed. I feel that there's some sort of group who should make that decision ultimately. Mm. Yeah, of course it wouldn't be popular because we're being told but I felt the same with the marriage referendum. You know, I felt like, why should he get why should that old fashioned guy in wherever get a yes or no vote on whether I should marry the person I love?
Yeah, or
yeah,
I mean,
you can, you didn't have to. You know, I say to my mum and dad, you didn't have to ask anyone.
But I mean, not just because I think a lot of the time when we talk about these issues that we consider modern and liberal, we tend to stereotype the older generations and say, you know, why should that older person?
Yes.
But why should that younger person?
You're
why
right.
should that?
You're
you know
right.
what I mean? Why
I
should that woman? Why should that man?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, we all do because a lot of the time we have a perception in our heads that the people who are going to be rigidly sticking to traditional family values are going to be older, when in fact that's not always true.
No.
But it's also the case that you shouldn't get a say in what I do with my body, and I shouldn't get a say in what you do with yours or your marriage or your life or whatever it is.
That's it. And that is my view. That's my opinion. And that's not going to change.
But it's really interesting because I was at a talk in Trinity probably about a year and a half ago now. We were talking about repeal. We were talking about activism online. Mm. And Tara Flynn was there. I think it was Trinity. And she was talking about how the pro-choice side and the pro-life side are depicted as being two sides of one spectrum.
Mm.
And she's like, you know, the pro-choice side is pictured as being on the left, on the liberal, and the pro-life side is pictured as being on the right. And she's like, but actually, if you think about it, the pro-choice side is in the middle because we're not pro-abortion in the same way that the pro-life side are anti-abortion. We're not the opposite side of that coin.
Yeah.
We're actually saying we're not pro or anti this act or this decision, but what we were pro or anti is what we were pro is you having the choice to decide what happens your life and your body and your future. And she's like, and that's actually in the middle. And it is really harmful. It's like, especially in the media when it is depicted as being the opposite side of anti-choice or the opposite side of pro-life, because it kind of automatically, like, you know, the opposite of pro-life is what? Anti-life or pro-death.
Yeah.
Which is totally, you know, mischaracterization of what's actually happening. And it's just really interesting, I think, when you kind of think about it that way and go, well, we're actually not campaigning for abortion. We're campaigning for choice. And I think as well, like when we talk about this referendum, I was talking to my mom about it recently enough. And she said, well, actually, my parents are going to be away.
Right.
Which is driving me a bit mad after my months and months and months of campaigning with them. But they're going to be in the States.
Yeah.
And again, if they were in London, I would probably pay for them to fly home, but because they're going to be in America, it's just too expensive.
Of course,
So they're not going to vote. But my mum said to me recently, "Are we voting for or against abortion now?" And I think that's a really confusing part of it as well. That it's like, no, we're actually not. Like, we're voting for legislation to be put in place around abortion.
Yeah.
You know, and basically, well, like, we're voting for the Eighth Amendment to be removed from the Constitution, so that there's no mention of bodily autonomy or the right to life.
Yeah.
In the Constitution, which is mad as well, that there's something to do with like medical health, you know, like medical healthcare, reproductive rights in the Constitution is totally nuts.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I just also to be very clear on the example I was talking about, the friend of mine, I think she should have had the choice. She wouldn't have opted for an abortion, but I think she should have had the choice. And I don't think that she should have had an abortion either. That would be entirely up to her. I have, you know, so I just want to make that clear.
You know what? it's also really hard to say, you know, obviously she, from what you're saying, I gather that she would have maybe had the means to go to the UK and decided not to. But at the same time, if abortion was legal in Ireland and wasn't stigmatised and wasn't taboo and wasn't done with a flight and a suitcase and, you know, under cover of darkness, maybe that choice would have seemed freer to her as well.
Absolutely. We have contacts in the
UK. But it wouldn't have been a huge deal.
I mean, imagine being told that, it's not allowed here, but if you really wanted one, we have contacts in the UK. I mean, when you're already going through the torture of being told the child you're carrying isn't going to survive outside the womb, you know, then to be told, well, you know, you'd be grand though, because you can, you know, book a flight, get on a flight, pack your bag, potentially go on your own. you know, it's just awful. And that's sort of that's
and
my
do people talk about this in the UK? Because I always think it's very interesting when I buy UK magazines, they'll often talk about abortion rights in the States, or there'll often be pieces about abortion rights in the States, but they never seem to mention that right across the water.
I mean, not necessarily in the media as much, but I mean, certainly I am definitely living in a pro-choice bubble. You know, so when most of my team, certainly, you know, we've talked about it, and they see it pretty much quite maybe perhaps simplistic like me, that it just women should have the choice in Ireland.
But that's interesting to me as well, because I feel like in Irish workplaces, you probably wouldn't bring it up.
So I work on a social media team, and we are constantly having to have conversations about what could potentially offend, what could, you know, this campaign, okay, you know, we look at other companies who've messed up, like when Dove did that video of the
black woman peeling her skin off and turning white.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Dove at the time, that video continued and she became a Middle Eastern woman, but it was the order of it. They should, you know, as we always say, surely there was a room full of people and one person went, oh, maybe now we change the order, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and we're constantly doing that because, well, there's me, who's in my late 30s, one of the other managers is in her mid 30s. My manager would probably be early 30s, and then everyone else in the team's around 23, 24. So they're teaching me every day.
So they're all very woke, is what you're trying to say.
They're totally woke.
Woke bitches.
Woke bitches. And they are, you know, they're teaching me to be more woke. Because I'm definitely a different generation, you know, from them, because it's quite a gap. I mean, I certainly don't, you know, when we're together, I certainly don't act it, but you do see every...
So like, are you sure you want that extra drink now, Linda?
Yeah. But like, you do... So they're teaching me every day, but... and I suppose I've been quite vocal about the referendum. I love talking about Irish stuff. So anytime something big happens, you know, so some of those videos, was that video on the beach, I don't know, by Repeal the 8th.
Women.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll bring that up.
That
in
was
our,
beautiful.
In our
that
newsroom.
Was the poem by Sarah Griffin,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I loved it. I'll bring that up and I'll share it with the team and I'll share it with the wider PR marketing teams. Almost like a quiet, you know, anytime there's something really great from here, I'll, you know, I'm really proud of it. Almost.
Conor McGregor.
So absolutely. I've never.
go on.
So I think I've been quite vocal about it. And it was only recently I thought I should probably be careful because I shouldn't be forcing my views on them either.
But
you know,
the thing
I've presumed they're all for it.
Yes, but you live in a country where it's legal.
Yes.
So it's actually okay to be in work and going, yes, I am pro-choice.
Yeah.
Because that's what that's what's said in the law in the UK.
Yeah.
Whereas in Ireland, I think if you went into a workplace and you started a debate about it, somebody could go to HR and go,
absolutely.
Declan made me feel really uncomfortable because he was talking about this thing that's enshrined in our constitution and I disagree with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because I'd send stuff around in emails and, oh, look at this fantastic video from Repeal the 8th, blah, 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 blah. And actually I've sent it and go, oh, actually, maybe I shouldn't have sent that because that's me. Am I enforcing my views on the wider teams in this organisation? Because, yeah, so definitely need to be, I mean, but you're right, it's legal in the UK. So there's definitely a different mindset.
Yeah. But I think it is, I mean, one of the things you touched on there was the need for having people who are maybe balanced and informed and who have a cross-section of society. But one of the things I think we're really bad at in Irish media is providing balance. Like, I'm not sure if you saw it, but the prime time the other night, they were talking about sexual education in schools. And there's been kind of a little bit of a hoo-ha about it. I don't know if you listened to the episode of Second Captains where they were talking about the Ulster rugby trial, but it was actually brilliant. Okay. Second Captains, the podcast, I'll put it in the show notes. But they were talking about the Ulster rugby trial and about sexual education in schools and basically about how Catholic organisations have complained and said you shouldn't be teaching, basically you shouldn't be promoting homosexuality in Catholic schools because this is against our ethos, this kind of thing. And Roe McDermott, who is a very intelligent, very smart, kind of prominent woke feminist, but also author, scholar, journalist, was on speaking about this, and for balance, on the other side, there was the editor of the Irish Catholic.
Oh, for God's sake.
Which to me, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know anything about this man. Like, I presume he's also a journalist. I presume he's very well educated. I presume he's smart.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt like, well, what qualifies you to take this other side? And, like, balance often, you know, is construed to mean we need somebody who's for and somebody who's against, instead of finding somebody who can just explain it.
Yes.
Because if you're talking about something really extreme, like, you know, complaining about talking about homosexuality in schools, how do you balance that without having somebody on who's a bigot?
Yeah.
To be
honest. Yeah, like, absolutely.
You don't.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't.
And I mean, I don't know, like, do you watch any of the kind of UK panel discussions?
I mean, no.
I know we have them, but like, I don't really watch them because it doesn't apply to us. You know what I mean? So we obviously have the channels, but
yeah,
we have the channels now.
We do.
We follow the challenge.
Look at us, mad about ourselves. No, I don't really know. I mean, I just probably am a bit ashamed to say that. I don't really watch those.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, is it as bad in the UK? But I do know that they roll out Katie Hopkins quite well for #balance.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah, is the same. But obviously media is coming at it as well, trying to get...
Yeah, I mean, this morning is trying a bit. Yeah, this morning is definitely trying a bit more of that now. Those sort of controversial. Well, they wheel her out, wheel Katie Hopkins out.
Yeah,
they definitely. But I suppose it's not that. I don't see it the way like with the referendum. You know, back in what year was that? 2015.
The marriage equality referendum. What was it? 2015.
I mean, that was pretty. Some of those debates were pretty vicious.
They were horrific.
Yeah, they were. I suppose I don't really see that but then do we have, apart from Brexit, you know, do we have those hot burning topics in the UK as much? For example, gay marriage. For example, yeah.
I guess abortion. The burning topics in the UK are probably a little bit more localized. You might have, there's a lot of talk around race issues or around classism and kind of ghettoization in certain boroughs in London.
Yeah.
But those discussions are probably happening in smaller pockets.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not so much a big national discussion having a chat among residents near Grenfell about what happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a huge issue.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily one that the entire country is talking about. It's not going to be brought to referendum.
Yeah.
No, it's awful. Before we finish up... We're almost at the end of our time together. I wanted to ask a little bit about, I guess this is kind of lightening the tone, right?
Yeah.
Instagram. I know this is something that we've talked about a little bit among ourselves. I think we were kind of sending each other long, protracted voice notes at one point last year. We were chatting about this, about basically the pressure on men.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I obviously talk and think a lot about the pressure on women and women's image and women's health and size, but there is definitely a growing pressure on men.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time now, You put up quite like a significant amount of like topless selfies.
Yeah, in my defense, though, I had to stop because I was seeing someone who didn't appreciate it.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
Oh my God. I mean,
it was a thing. I was putting.
You were in a controlling relationship.
Thing is, I wasn't, but I was putting some up, and looking back, they're a bit like potentially. I mean, why did I put a picture up of me with my, you know, showing off my muscles and my six pack and everything for anything other than attention and, you know. Attention. But I think at the time, maybe I was craving attention when I put those pictures up, but I did have a boyfriend for a lot of the
time. Well, don't they say that there's a dopamine release for every like?
Yeah, definitely.
Although, like, I think it's probably like heroin, that if you get 200 likes on this photo, you need to get 400 the next time to get the same reaction.
Get definitely.
Do you know what I mean? That you're like, well, I got way more on the last one.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, I'm still, though, I still, when... I put things up on Facebook now. It's probably because not as many people are using Facebook. I mean, I'm certainly not. But like, I might put up something and get, oh, that only got 50 likes.
Yeah.
And then I say to myself, you're a 37-year-old man, get a grip. Like, yeah, I do. But I'm always that conflict with myself. Like, that whole thing. But I think for Instagram, yeah, I mean, I do. I'll put up every so often, I'll put up a picture. Thing is, I work really hard at the gym, I guess. And yeah, there's that element of me that's a narcissist and I'm a show-off to an extent. You know, when I go to a club, I take my top off. You know, I go to the clubs where there's a lot of guys who dance with their tops off. You know?
I would love to spend a day as a gay man. Honestly, my dream is to go to, well, actually, like okay, so totally hot, ripped gay man, right, to be specific. I'd love to go to a club, take my top off, and then I want to go to the gay sauna.
Oh, yeah. Well, the gay sauna is a dying industry in the UK now because of the dating apps. They don't need to go and pay to get the ride because they can just go off to a party and get it.
But is it not actually a sauna?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no one's going to them anymore. There was a chain called Chariots, and they're dotted around London and very successful for many years. And apparently, there's no one in them now. You'll read an article
it's
every
very
so
good
often
for detoxifying.
Well, very good. They get, you know, detoxify the skin and then get the ride. But so I suppose there's that thing of I was going to tell you about the time I went to Ministry of Sound about a month ago, and it's a night called Glitterbox, which is from Ibiza. So it's a really popular night in Ibiza. But again, being a group of gays who work out a lot, we were used to taking our tops off in clubs. And we were told after a while we had to put them back on because it was because of the female clientele. They were getting quite sensitive to it. And what's the term? I'm trying to think of the term that was used to us.
Were they feeling intimidated?
Yeah, maybe it was. The women are feeling... And I thought, are they? Which women are saying this? Because girls were just coming up and just having the crack, having a chat. And
yeah,
you know, they'll have a little bit of a feel. Which, you know, that brings me, often is one of my issues of, you know, you might get grabbed onto in a club, in a gay club or at Glitterbox. And it's that thing of, am I asking for that because my top is off?
No.
But then is the woman in a really tight top asking for it? Absolutely
no,
not.
No, nobody's asking for it. Nobody has the right to touch your body.
Yeah. So it's one of my big things at the moment.
Yes.
Because I make a big deal of it. I'll kind of grab a guy because I can get quite angry quite quickly. And when it's stuff like that, I'll call someone out on it.
Oh my God, I get angry. Yeah. Like, I get so angry. And that's actually, I mean, aside from the fact that I'm like a boring curmudgeon, that's probably one of the reasons that I don't go to pubs or clubs anymore, is because I used to just get so pissed off that I'd be like, don't touch me.
Yeah.
And then like men would be like, oh, would you get over yourself? And you're like, no, like, get your hand off me.
I've been told. Now, we've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but I've been told it. Oh, you love yourself. Oh, cheer up. I was just having, you're the one standing here in the gay club with your top off. And it's actually quite alarming that it can be younger guys too. It's just in a really sort of pervy way. But no, going back to the Instagram thing. I do think there's definitely a growing pressure on men to, because I had to do a detox recently of, or a clean out. I did a kind of a detox in terms of staying off Instagram and not
scrolling.
You went
to the sauna. You cleared out your Instagram.
I did. But no, I did kind of an Instagram clear out because I realised I was just following all these guys with incredible bodies and incredible lives. How they finance these lives, I don't know. But I actually thought, are they teaching me anything? Like, I still follow a few guys who actually post really amazing workouts and they have incredible bodies and I take inspiration from that. But actually, the majority of the people I was just looking, going, oh, I'd love to have a body. Oh, my stomach doesn't like that. Oh, my chest needs to be bigger. Oh, I'd love to have that, you know, hairier chest. Or I'd love to. And you're constantly comparing. And that's not just me. I'd imagine for me as a 37-year-old man, it's tough enough. But for a 20-year-old, I mean, I see the way my nephews are. My nephews are obsessed with my muscles. Oh, Uncle Dex got an 8-pack. Uncle Dex got. Now you're just showing off. But they do, and they're quite obsessed with it. It's really sweet that. But also, you're thinking, but you're 9.
Yeah.
Was I obsessed with muscles?
I don't think we were even aware. I didn't even know what a muscle was when I was 9.
And, you know.
Do you ever think about your responsibility in terms of that you're contributing to this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am.
I was away with them for a few days, and I remember at one stage I took off my t-shirt and I thought, should I not be, they're on Instagram, you know, one of the older one, and I thought, should I perhaps not allow him to follow me on Instagram, maybe block him, or because I'm concerned if he's following me and he's very much aware of my body, is he following other, you know, pop stars who got, or you just don't know the various influencers now who have big YouTube channels, and then they're also happen to spend a lot of the time in the gym, and that's the avenue they're going down, and suddenly they're talking about healthy lifestyles and
well, it's, you know, that kind of old thing, isn't it, that like you can't, we've opened Pandora's box now and we can't close it, and we can't put all the topless torsos back in.
Yeah.
So we just need to talk to children and go, that's not the most important thing.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like loads more going on. There's loads more in the world. There's loads more to people than their 8-pack.
Yeah.
Even if that's what they choose to show you on Instagram.
Yeah, it's true. And I do. I've had it. I've had it with people because I suppose to look at me and form an opinion is one thing, but then to meet me and realise actually I'm quite the piss taker. I massively up the Irish when I'm out. You're
more than just your APAC deck.
I am more than just my body. But no, I do. And I think it's, what was my point there? It's that thing of, I've had it said to me, you know, oh, you're almost like I'm, you know, it's that whole, that God, I can't believe you posted that. You know, I dressed up as Dora the Explorer at a party back in November. I had a couple of people go, God, fair play to you for posting that. You know, you looked ridiculous. And I was like, why is that though? Well, because normally your shots are like, you know, are shirtless.
Sexy.
So people form an opinion.
Well, like I was shocked by the Dora the Explorer because the Halloween previously, didn't you go as like Aladdin or something?
I mean, no, I've gone as like a gladiator, real typically gay Halloween.
I don't think I've seen you with a top on in Halloween since I met you.
It was in the Dean in Dublin and I had to, it was a fancy dress children's book characters. And I thought, maybe He-Man, but I was like, he's not really.
You could have gone as Mowgli.
I could have gone as Mowgli. I was offered Mowgli. My friend had gone as Mowgli the month before, and I thought, I can't. I need to put clothes on. And I loved being Dora because all the mothers were coming up for photos and going, my daughter loves Dora. My daughter loves Dora. I'm like, here's, you know, 37-year-old man. The Dora wig.
It's kind of creepy, actually, isn't it, if you think about it?
But I in all my photos, I look really
imagine if you'd gone
really
to a playground
happy.
Right afterwards.
Look at it at Dec Levy on Instagram.
You look really delighted with yourself.
And it's like, no, I was literally living my best life as Dora. So.
And that's probably a lesson for us all. Next time you think of putting, like, your best photo on Instagram, think, what is, like, maybe your best photo isn't the photo you think is your best photo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like true. The best moment in your life rather than the best image of your body.
Yeah, because what is it you're posting your photos on Instagram for? Is it, okay, I'm going to try and, like, because before it was, I'm a journalist, I write, you know, I write beauty columns, I need to put up how all the free stuff I get. I love how I correct myself. You know, I need to show people that I'm busy and I've got loads of work and I'm writing loads of columns and I'm getting loads of free stuff and I have this amazing life and I'm going to all these spas. But then when I moved to London, it was actually, I couldn't believe how much I didn't miss that side of my life. Because people used, I remember when I was offered the job in my current company, which I'm still there 4.5 years later, and he said to me, his concern was that I was giving up kind of this glamorous life.
Yeah.
And I had to explain to him, I was like, yeah, I get so many free things. I've travelled to various parts of the world because of the job I did. You know, I joke about these honeymoon holidays I had.
Yeah.
But they didn't pay my bills.
Yeah.
I still had to work in a shop to pay the rent, you know, and pay the bills that came my way each month. So I do think it's that whole thing, you know, I always say to people, just put the stuff on Instagram that reflects you, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or don't. If you want people to think you've an amazing life because it makes you feel better about yourself, then absolutely go ahead with that too.
Yeah,
I tried to put it. But I've had it. I remember being called childish recently. God, Declan's very childish. And I remember being raging because I'm really childlike. I mean, I love Disney and Christmas and cartoons and I really am. And that's why I suppose I get on really well with kids because I don't do that stupid voice. Hello, you know, that silly voice people put to talk to kids. But yeah, so there's a real childlike element. But I remember thinking for the first time my whole life, because of what people had seen on Instagram, that suddenly I was putting this other stuff up, that they had decided, oh, that's very childish. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Whereas for you, that was part of your personality, but it was just a side that you hadn't been showing.
Yeah, I hadn't been showing. Yeah. And I hadn't been showing it because I felt like I need to put
to
across a certain persona.
Yeah,
which is probably
appearances.
That I'm this really, was this really cool, you know, jerk.
Hot gay.
cool gay.
Oh, cool gate. Okay.
Cool gate with muscles.
We will leave it there. Where can people find you? At Dec Levy on Instagram.
At Dec Levy on Instagram. I never tweet because, I mean, my job is social media, so I hardly ever tweet.
You just lurk.
I lurk. But yes, I do love an Instagram story. I'm probably a little bit obsessed with Instagram stories.
Okay.
Yeah, and love a GIF. So, you know, watch out for my wonderful GIF work on Instagram stories.
Would have been so funny if you called it a GIF.
Jiffy.
Okay.
A GIF. I love a GIF.
At Dec Levy on Instagram.
At Dec Levy.
Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers, Rosemary. Thanks for having me.
If you're interested in becoming a patron, you can do so at patreon.com/howtobesound. It's basically a way to support me and support the podcast. You can pay $3.33 a month, $6.66 a month, or $9.99, and you get various different perks, including special bonus minisodes that only you will hear, and that's patreon.com/howtobesound. As a patron of How To Be Sound, you get your name read out on the podcast each and every fortnight. So I'd like to say thank you to Siobhan O'Rourke, Kira Norton, Katie Joy, Aoife Bradley, Niamh Ní Gabhán, Hazel O, Eving McBride, Avril Flynn and Una for supporting the podcast. How To Be Sound is recorded, produced and edited by Liam Geraghty. You can listen to his podcast, Meet Your Maker, anywhere you listen to podcasts, and meetyourmaker.ie. You can find me at Rosemary McCabe with an A in my Mac all across social media or on rosemarymccabe.com. Until next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.